Try Therapy Notes, the number one rated electronic health record system available today. With live telephone support 7 days a week, it's clear why Therapy Notes is rated 4.9 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot and has a 5-star rating on Google. Therapy Notes makes billing, scheduling, note-taking, and telehealth incredibly easy. And now, for all you prescribers out there, Therapy Notes is proudly introducing ePrescribe. Try it today with no strings attached and see why everyone is switching to Therapy Notes, now featuring ePrescribe. You can get 2 months free by using promo code CHAT at therapynotes.com. Trauma Therapist Network is a website to learn about trauma and how it shows up in our lives and to find a trauma therapist. Go to traumatherapistnetwork.com to find a trauma therapist near you today. Therapy Chat Podcast, episode 436.
This is the Therapy Chat Podcast with Laura Reagan, LCSWC. The information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health professional. And now, here's your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and I'm going to make this very quick because I'm about to run to the airport and go out of town. My guest today is someone who is well-respected in our field, a vibrant and interesting presenter and speaker and human who is, we are very grateful to have here on Therapy Chat today. My guest is Lisa Dion. Lisa Dion, LPC, RPTS, is an international teacher, creator of Synergetic Play Therapy, founder and president of the Synergetic Play Therapy Institute, co-founder of the Synergetic Institution, and co-founder of the Synergetic Education Institute, creator of the Business of Therapy, and host of the Lessons from the Playroom podcast. Very prolific person. She's the author of Aggression in Play Therapy, a neurobiological approach for integrating intensity, and is the 2015 recipient of the Association for Play Therapy's Professional Education and Training Award of Excellence. And I heard Lisa speak last year in England when I was at the Not Your Typical Psychotherapist Conference. And I had heard her name before. I was following Synergetic Play Therapy on Facebook, but I really wasn't sure how much it related to my work since I don't work with kids anymore. And in our conversation or our presentation that we observed at in England, Lisa was talking about neuroscience and nervous system regulation in many ways that relate to, you know, children and adults, because it's about the developing brain, which we all had one. And if we're adults now, we were once children, and our brain is impacted by the ways that our brains have developed. So that's what we talked about in our conversation today. There's a lot of interesting topics we covered. One thing I wanted to ask her about was about her perspective on ADHD, ADD, trauma, nervous system regulation, how she sees it. And she was able to explain that really well and clearly. So I thought it was very thought-provoking and enjoyable, and I hope you will too. Let's dive right in. Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and today I'm so excited to be joined by Lisa Dion. Lisa, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you so much for the invitation, Laura. Appreciate being here.
You're welcome. And I had heard of Synergetic Play Therapy. I was following you on social media, but I really didn't know you. I'd heard more of the concept. But in London last year, I heard you speak and I was like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Everything you were saying, I was like, I got to ask her if she'll come on my show. So I'm so grateful that we're making it happen now. And I know our audience is going to really be fascinated by what you're sharing. And yeah, and what we wanted to talk about today is kind of like some of the things that people are talking about a lot on social media and talking about a lot in our kind of public discourse of struggles with attention, focus, memory, and we're going to really like unpack that and see what are some of the things that could be at play when we're having those challenges. But before we get into it, will you just start off by telling our audience a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
Sure. So obviously, my name is Lisa Dion. I'm the creator of Synergetic Play Therapy. So for those that are not familiar, it's a model of play therapy in the therapy world, which if that's not familiar also to individuals listening, it's a way to support kids in their healing process. What's also really lovely about Synergetic Play Therapy is that the philosophy or the principles are also applicable to adults. And so it's not just solely for kids per se. I'm also the president and the founder of the Synergetic Play Therapy Institute. And this is what I love to do. I love to teach, train. We train therapists and clinicians, parents around the world on how to understand what's up, right? What's up in kids' bodies? What's up in our bodies? What's happening? Mm-hmm. My favorite thing is in the space between, you know, what's going on between two people. It's my favorite thing to talk about. And then I'm also a mama with a daughter who is about to go off to college in a couple months, which is like blowing my own mind as a parent at the moment. So, yes.
Wow. Thank you for naming that. I would say I had like, you know how Brene Brown talks about like breakdown crossed out and it says like spiritual awakening. I had that kind of experience when my oldest child went to college. And even though I was very like, I thought I was mentally prepared for it being an emotionally impactful experience for me based on my attachment history, it still blew my world apart. And I had like a health breakdown and everything. So it's not to say that that would happen to you, but it's just like, it's such a significant life milestone for the child, but for the parents, caregivers
it is.
Too.
And to weave it into our conversation, my attention's going to start going in other places. You know, right. My attention's not going to be on parenting in the same way. So my energy's going to shift. My focus is going to shift. My attention's going to shift. And where, how, I guess those are the questions that are being revealed, you know, just what's, well, you know, what's next, but
as it unfolds. Yeah. Well, it's interesting too, because it's one of the few kind of life milestones or like important life rituals that we still in Western culture still pay attention to, that, you know, kind of 18-year-old leaving the nest idea. It's not always for college, but in some way that individuation and separation from family of origin is an important part of like our life journey. And usually we gloss over those things. And especially with kid going to college, it's like something where we tend to focus on, you know, well, what college are they going to? Did they get a scholarship? Are they going to play sports? Are they going to be in a sorority, fraternity? You know, those kinds of things. And the academic achievement and the parents' pride or fears, concerns, will they be okay? That was me. But the, you know, the emotional parts of it and the whole experience is often overlooked. So I think that's a metaphor for everything we're talking about too, the ways that our culture just kind of glosses over a lot of what's going on underneath. And like you said, in the space between two and, you know, groups. So I feel like I just want to ask you before I ask you to go into what we're talking about a little more. Can you tell us what synergetic means? Because
yes.
It has for me some kind of a like visceral meaning that I don't know. Yeah.
I love that you just said that because when I teach my introduction courses, it's the very first question is, what do you think it means? And the go-to is, I don't really cognitively know, but I have a feeling about what it actually means, which I love that.
Good. I'm on the right track.
Well, it's actually a physics word, which is funny to bring a physics word into the realm of therapy. but it means systems and transformation. And what it talks about is two systems coming together to create something, to create a synergy that allows for a transformation that neither could have done on their own. And what I love and so appreciate about that felt sense is it implies that both systems transform. So in synergetic play therapy, we make space and we talk a lot about the transformation of the therapist in addition to the client. And I love that because there's so much permission that we get to be on a journey alongside and that we're deeply impacted and that we're growing up too alongside in the process and we're shifting. So it's systems in transformation. And yes, there's a real feeling about that, I know.
Yeah. And for me, what I picked up is I'm not in any way someone who could talk about physics other than I understand there's gravity. I've never learned anything about physics ever. I've never taken a physics class. So oftentimes those concepts seem to just go right over my head. But there's, words that come up for me when I hear synergetic is synergy, which is some kind of alignment, energy, of course. And jetic feels some kind of movement. Synergistic feels together. So those are the things that come up for me.
You got it. That's the beautiful encapsulation of the right brain part of it. And then the left brain says systems and transformation.
Yes. Yes. Oh, that's so cool. I love it. I knew I was drawn to it for some reason, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it. So thanks, because that was sticking for me. And I was but what I need to know. My left brain wanted to know.
There you go.
So speaking about attention, we're hearing so many people recently. It feels like to me, I'll say, it's been a thing as long as I've been a therapist. But recently, I really hear a lot of people speaking very concretely. I have ADHD. I have ADHD, my ADHD brain. And I love the permission to just own a difference in the way one's brain is receiving and processing information, of course. And I'm curious if we can, if you can share from your perspective, how do you look at that when you hear someone say, I have ADHD symptoms? What do you see as what could be happening there?
Yeah.
You're very neuroscience based.
Yeah. So as we get into this conversation, I think it's important that listeners hear that what I'm not saying is that ADD or ADHD isn't a thing. Of course, mm-hmm. It's a thing. And yes, it even can be measured in the brain. Yes. I think this conversation needs to be the and, right? Yes. Right. And what are some of the possible contributors to that? So that's what I want to talk about. What are possible contributors beyond, in some cases, genetics? Okay. So we're going to sort of go, yep. Yes, absolutely. And let's talk about the things that we don't normally talk about. And so my invitation is, as we consider our own thoughts about ADD or ADHD, maybe we identify as, or maybe we have clients that do, or however it is, how much are we thinking about the and, right? And the other. So a couple things. Let's just talk about trauma for a second. The way that it is stored in someone's body can look like so many things. So trauma, in its expression, can look like everything from states of dysregulation, activation, so levels of anxiety, levels of depression, et cetera, irritability, all of those things that we're familiar with. But it can also look like sensory processing struggles. So it can also lead to a sensory sensitivities, auditory processing struggles, kinesthetic processing struggles, but it can also look like attention struggles. So sometimes what's labeled as ADD or ADHD is actually a trauma response. That's very possible. But also what sometimes is labeled as ADD or ADHD can also be a sensory response. I personally would say that all sensory struggles have a trauma component, and I'll say why I'm saying that. As we move through the world and our sensory system is bombarded, that's registered as too much. too much auditory, too much this, too much that. And so according to the biology says that feels traumatic in my system. So sensory and trauma go hand in hand, even if we're not talking about something did something to someone or someone was in a car accident or, you know, that kind of a thing. But just the nature of moving through the world being with sensory sensitivities can feel traumatic and can also sometimes be misunderstood as ADD or ADHD. So those are, I'll just pause there, but those are two. Trauma and sensory are often confused with.
Thank you. And I want to just add to what you said. For people who are listening, when we say the word trauma, people often think that's synonymous with abuse.
Right.
But traumas can be many things where no one had any intention of harming anyone, and they're still received to the body as trauma. And a simple example of that would be like a surgery. You know, it's just surgery. Yeah, but your body is receiving that as a trauma. And even if it's to help, you know, save your life, all of those things, that doesn't dismiss or disregard that it can be a traumatic experience to the body. It, you know,
I was even going to add birth trauma.
Oh, yeah.
Right. The experience for many people coming into the world is there's a trauma to the body in some way that can then set up the sensory system that can lead to patterns that can, and to your point, there's no right or wrong about that. There's not someone did something. It's the experience of being human, you know, and we have many experiences through life of being human where something has felt challenging to our bodies in some way, or something has felt overwhelming and we weren't able to process it or integrate it. And it lands in our system as a stuck pattern, if you will.
Thank you. Okay. So there's another word that you brought up that I would love to define for listeners. When you were talking about sensory responses and struggles, and you said trauma can impact kinesthetic processing, can you share what you mean by that?
Yeah, I'll actually even give an example of this.
Okay.
So I had a young client who in his school would often get in trouble because he would wander around the classroom touching everything, seemingly not paying attention, running his hands on everything. And the teacher really felt like, oh, this kid has attention deficit issues, right? We're constantly doing this. But actually what was going on for him is he was incredibly disconnected from his body because he was often in a state of overwhelm in his body because the word kinesthetic is talking about the body. So things registered for him as incredibly intense. And so why would he want to be in his body? I mean, I just think that's an important thing, right? If something's intense, why would you want to spend time there? So he was a bit disconnected from his body. And the most brilliant strategy that he had was to go around the room and touch things, because in the act of touching, it oriented him actually gently into his body. It actually provided him an opportunity to have a sense of, here I am, 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 here I am. So it was actually an orienting response because he was disconnected. It wasn't actually ADD. It was a brilliant strategy that he had to help him attempt to be in his body. And that's just an example of, you know, these things that can seem like we're not focused or paying attention. They're brilliant strategies. And I'm going to get into, there's another piece that I want to share about what can look like ADD or ADHD, but just back into the body. The body does what the body needs to do. And sometimes that looks like hyperactivity issues. It looks like attention issues, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. But it becomes a problem because the need is in the classroom for the child to sit in their seat, be quiet, and don't be wandering around. It wouldn't be a problem if the child was able to just be exploring their environment in a way that was orienting them. They'd be able to stay in their body more, you know?
Well, exactly. Or so I didn't mention this. So in addition to the Synergetic Play Therapy Institute, we also have our sister Institute, which is the Synergetic Education Institute, which is everything we're talking about, but in the classrooms. So to your point, yes, educating a teacher on what that's about and then helping co-create really wonderful strategies so the child gets to be themselves. Maybe it's the child gets to have things in their hand. Maybe the child's seat is in the back and the child gets full permission to stand up and move. Maybe the child gets permission to sit on a yoga ball. Heck, maybe all the kids get permission to stand up and move and put something in their hands. I'm an advocate for that, actually.
I know. You hear all the time.
Kid.
That's
everybody.
Right. When some kids get to do it and other kids are like, well, I want to do that in the class. Oh, we can't let everybody do it.
Why? Everybody.
Why? Right, exactly. Why can't we all have our nervous systems actually feeling good while we're there to learn? You know,
yeah.
That's what the goal should be.
So, Laura, I want to tie in a brain piece.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to go back to the trauma. So we talk about the sensory, talk about the trauma. If my system is walking through the world in a hypervigilant way because I am oriented to danger. I'm oriented to, I just don't feel safe in the world. I don't feel safe in my body. And so therefore I'm walking around the world, you know, anxious. Where's my attention going to be? Because it's not going to be on learning math, right? My attention.
Scanning for threats.
Constantly scanning, right? This seemingly not focused. And from a brain perspective, it makes sense because I'm not in my executive functioning. I'm smack dab down into lower centers of my brain, where my highest priority is just trying a way to feel safe in the moment. So I'm not close to up here. So I'm in reactivity. I am in impulsivity. I'm in survival mode. I'm going to have higher states of activation or dysregulation in my autonomics. I'm not going to present as an individual that is seemingly connected and grounded because that's not my orientation in the moment. There might be danger. I'm anxious. I'm overwhelmed. I'm hypervigilant. So I think that's important too, because sometimes there's that expectation when a child is not feeling safe or when a child is really activated and they are seemingly having attention issues. Well, just pay attention. Just fine. Just focus. Just pay attention. And the brain's going, oh, I am focused. Oh, I am paying attention. Not to that math problem. But I am paying attention to that look over there in so-and-so's face because I don't really know what that means. But, oh, I'm paying attention to it. All right. Or, oh, yeah, I'm paying attention. I'm scanning for these cues right now. Right. The brain is very much paying attention to anything that has to do with safety.
Yes. The Institute for Creative Mindfulness is the EMDR therapy training brainchild of Dr. Jamie Marriage, a clinician and author who's on a mission to confront stigma around mental health, trauma, and dissociation. The Institute, informed by Jamie's work, teaches a somatic, expressive, bottom-up approach to EMDR therapy that does not treat dissociation like a dirty word. ICM empowers their students to navigate dissociation as a normal response to trauma and stress when it shows up. Dr. Jamie Marriage is out and proud on various levels about her own recovery and is a strong believer in the healing capacities of EMDR therapy and helping our clients to heal from the impact of trauma. I and two of my team members have been trained by the Institute for Creative Mindfulness directly with Jamie, and I was impressed with how dissociation really was treated as just a normal aspect of trauma therapy work, which it is. Both Jamie and the consultants were matter of fact about if and when dissociation arises, it's okay, it's normal, and here's how you can help the client in that situation. The Institute for Creative Mindfulness is offering a coupon code to save 15% off any program offered by ICM. This includes their EMDR therapy basic training programs and a wide variety of their home study, advanced topics, and other CE offerings. Go to instituteforcreativemindfulness.com and use promo code 15OFF for listeners. There's a link in the show notes. You can copy the promo code and use the link right there in the show notes to make it easy. Sometimes it's the small actions we take that make big differences in our lives. Noticing glimmers can make such a change in my mood to say, what else is here? And I can always notice other things that give me that little positive spark in my life. And they kind of stitch together in the day to change my whole outlook. One small change that has big benefits is taking care of your gut health to support whole body well-being. Seeds DSO1 Daily Symbiotic benefits your gut, skin, and heart health in just 2 little capsules a day. I like taking Seed because it's portable, it doesn't have to be refrigerated, it's easy to incorporate into my daily routine, and it makes me feel better just knowing I'm taking it. Trust your gut with Seeds DSO1 Daily Symbiotic. Go to seed.com/living and use code 25LIVING to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seeds DSO1 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/living. Code 25LIVING. Now, I might be muddying the waters, so if so, just, you know, help me get back on track. But I think, too, that when our system feels overwhelmed with, one, the need to be orienting for safety, but at the same time, there's also a need for connection with the adult in the room, their approval. You know, that's part of what allows someone to feel safe in an attachment relationship. You know, I think my experience is that there's also some zoning out that can happen, daydreaming, going away in their mind when it's just too overwhelming to be in this present moment, in one's body and in this environment. So the zoning out, which looks like, oh, you're daydreaming again.
Yep. So the way I like to think of it is if I can't find safety in my reality, I'll find safety in my virtual reality. So if I can't find it here, then I'll go here. And yeah, it absolutely can look like zoning out, some levels of dissociation, which exists on a continuum. Absolutely. Which then someone can also, they're not paying attention. They're not focused.
Right. And
which again, they're very focused on where the safety is, which is up here in their virtual reality.
Right. Okay. So I don't want to derail you too much from going into, you know, the causes of trouble with focus. So, I mean, I'm always comfortable talking about the attachment and trauma parts. So I'm always ready to bring it back to that anytime we need to.
Yeah. Well, I want to add in one that may be sort of the most unfamiliar of all of them. And I actually think it's the most prevalent. And it has to do with, we'll call it our highest values and priorities. So what does that mean? These are the things that bring us meaning. So we're all driven by things in our life that feel deeply, deeply meaningful to us. It's the things that we love doing, the things that we love talking about. It's how we love spending our time, what we love to learn, what we love to study, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? What we love to do. Well, kids, for example, are no different. You know, we might have a kid that is absolutely in love with carbs. You know, we might have another kid that's like, horses are their jam. You know, another one, I'm going to be an astronaut when I grow up, right? So we see this in kids. We all have it as adults as well. Well, when we are not engaged in things that are meaningful for us, we automatically drop back down into lower centers of the brain. So I want to give an example that I think everyone can probably relate with. We've all been to a conference of some kind or a training of some kind where the presenter was talking about something and you are registering the experience as absolute boredom, right? And the presenter actually may be a phenomenal presenter, but the topic is just not meaningful. And then all of a sudden, and I love looking at this at conferences when this happens, because I look around the room and, you know, we got people that are like doing this, or we got the side conversations that are happening, or we've got the pens going, you know, on the face, or we got the twirlies going on and we're biting our lips. We're, you know, and if you look around the room, it looks like a bunch of people that have attention issues. But maybe there's that person in the front row that's like this, just completely mesmerized. And the question at hand is why? And it has everything to do with meaning. So I think that's important for all of us to understand that when we are asked to engage in something or to do something that feels of low value or low priority, every single person has attention issues. Every single person has retention of information issues. Every single person has focus issues. it's interesting when you actually look at what are the strategies for ADD and ADHD. If you actually look at what the strategies are, it's all about linking low priority things to things that are meaningful. Really interesting, because it's trying to get this person inspired into an area or a focus that naturally brings their executive center online, because we are naturally up here. We're naturally engaged in our highest level of thinking and thought process when we're doing something that we love. Our capacity for challenge is greater. Our window of tolerance is greater. Our autonomics line up easier when we're doing that. And so sometimes what we see in a situation where someone feels like, oh my gosh, I have ADD or I have ADHD, is actually, I am uninspired, or I'm being asked to participate in something. I can't figure out the meaning in it. I don't love what I'm doing. I don't love this task. I don't love my job. I don't, or an aspect of my job. And so the autonomics do what the autonomics, I see this so much with kids at school that get labeled ADD or ADHD. And what I actually see is that there is a clash of a clash between what's meaningful for the child and the task at hand. So This child who loves sports, super high executive functioning going on in sports, is sitting in reading, and they hate to read and they cannot finish this reading to save their life. And then all of a sudden, oh my gosh, we have attention issues versus, you know what? We got to work on reading. Oh, but you love football? Sweet. You know what? We're going to concentrate all your reading around football so that your reading matches the thing that is most inspiring to you. And what do you see? You all of a sudden see a higher level of engagement, a higher level of focus, because it lands as interesting to the child. But adults are absolutely no different. I want to share a sort of zoom out here. At the Synergetic Play Therapy Institute, this is actually one of the things that I look for when and just in terms of running the company, because we have a lot of employees, a lot of contractors, is I look for where attention gets wobbly to help me understand who the person is versus who they're trying to be. Because if I keep having to remind somebody to do something, or I keep getting the hit of, oh my gosh, their attention, they lose focus, they're so scattered, that my very first go-to is, what am I missing about what's most inspiring to this individual? And what do I need to do to shift up their tasks so that I maximize what's happening in their executive functioning? Does it mean that they actually have ADD? I don't know. Even if it was true, the strategy is still the same, which I think is interesting. Get them inspired. So I'm curious, Laura, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, that just feels so true. And I'll share a little bit about myself. When I was a kid, I was, first of all, in my family, pegged as smart. And that was my best identity, being smart, right? That was my most approved of identity. And so school was easy academically, and I really had to do no homework or anything. I always had all my work done before I left school, even homework. And then my parents split up when I was six. So, you know, I'm talking about school, but I'm only kindergarten, first grade. And then my parents split up. I hated second grade. I hated every day of second grade. I loved the parts where I was like doing a project. I remember I did a project we had to do the platypus, and I could still remember how I loved learning about the platypus and writing that project. Just so proud of it, you know, the report and everything. Third grade, multiplication tables were so hard. Anything with memorization of dates, which is the way that they taught us history, was all just memorizing dates of wars. And I'm so deeply anti-war and anti-violence. And that's really something. I grew up in the 70s. I was really affirmed in that, you know, that message was very clear. So I hated learning these dates of wars, and I would be literally preoccupied with, well, why? These wars are so stupid. You know, it's all about, you know, power and taking away someone else's land for more power and pushing religion on people. I thought that even when I was like eight, I hated it. So I didn't want to memorize that stuff.
Exactly.
So when I look back on myself as a kid now, and I think, well, did I have ADHD? When I hear people talking about struggles with executive functioning, and I'm like, but it's impossible to deny the huge attachment rupture of my parents' divorce because my mom left and she was my primary caregiver. So it was me staying and her leaving. And yeah, I was preoccupied when I was a kid. I was anxious all the time. I was crying all the time. So I had trouble with learning, but I had always been so smart. So then I'm like, well, you know, was it, you know, you start to wonder, was I neurodivergent? And it's like, but I, yes or no, really doesn't matter. There's no doubt that the impact of developmental trauma, I diverged from a path I was on to a different path where school was harder. Social things became harder. Everything was just really hard. I began to hate school and miss school all the time. In fourth grade, I missed probably more school than I attended, you know? So these are all the classic things.
Yeah. And I'm just saying, because you're combining actually everything we're talking about.
Right.
Right. You're combining that even in that developmental trauma influence, there were some things that were still easier to learn than others because there was a more aligned interest or a more aligned curiosity. Right. Right? So all of it can coexist. There's the, right, the impact of your attention had to go elsewhere. You were anxious. You were processing what had just happened. So that was the highest priority. And then, so I love the purpose of this conversation, which is how about we zoom out and just, why are my attention issues the way that they are rather than, oh, I just have ADD or ADHD. Let me get curious about what that is. Is it a trauma piece playing out? Is it a sensory piece playing out? Is it a, I'm bored out of my mind and I can't find meaning in this playing out? Is it all three? Is it something else? Is it genetics? Is it, and I don't know, for me, that's where the wisdom comes in, because then we get to know ourselves and then we get to know what feels congruent for us. And then we get to become brilliant at fine tuning our strategies. I think, you know, rather than just, well, I'm that and therefore I do that, like fine tune it for ourselves.
I think, you know, and I wonder what you think about this, but what I see in kids I've worked with and adults I've worked with who got the, you know, basically there was something that was like not clearly obvious to the family that could have impacted the child. And then the parents start getting from school, can't sit still, problems with focus, problems with attention. Your child has ADD or ADHD and they need to get medicated and go to the doctor. Then doctor says, well, why? And then, oh, the school said so. And then they get the medication. And again, I'm not like, I don't want to knock medications, but without the exploration of the factors that could be involved, do you think, I think, and I wonder what you think about this. I don't want to say, do you think that, you know, treating one aspect, maybe the attention or focus through the medication, leaves the developmental wounding unaddressed?
I feel like I can answer that with certainty from over 20 years in the field. I've just seen, I've just worked with and seen so many kids that came in with quote unquote attention issues. And then after doing the trauma work and then figuring out these other components, they didn't leave with the same attention issues.
Yeah.
And so in my practice, that's often how I would approach it with a family who was thinking about, I would say, let's do this process first. Let's do the developmental trauma part first. Let's also sync the child's interests up. Let's do both of those components first, and then we'll see what's left. And if there's a what's left, then we can actually narrow it down to, oh, maybe there's a genetic piece. Oh, maybe there's a piece that really biologically does need some more supports. Cool. Yeah. And then we go in and we add those needed supports because that's what we know we're working with. But if we don't know, there's too many possibilities of what could be contributing. That's my take on it.
Yes. Well, thank you. That's what I believe too. And I think kind of what was standing out while you were describing the, like, let's look at the big picture, is when we rush to assume one answer that has a, and this is our Western way of doing things. Let's find the answer. And what's the solution to the answer? Fix it. So problem, attention and focus. Answer, ADHD or ADD. Solution, medication. And then it just leaves out so many other aspects of what could be going on. It's like jumping to conclusions before really doing a full exploration.
Agreed.
Well, I wish I had more time to talk with you because you are, first of all, you are a wealth of knowledge about children and adults and brains and the space between us. And every time I'm around you, which is in London and here so far, my brain gets really fired up with a lot of excitement and curiosity. And I really would love to just, I guess I'll just have to do some training through your institute so I can learn more myself. So where can people find all the wonderful things that you do?
So synergeticplaytherapy.com for all things related to play therapy, trainings, all of that. And then I do a lot of presentations also for adults and for companies and those pieces. And I can be found there at lisa-dion.com.
Beautiful.
And then all the social media places. I also have my podcast, Lessons from the Playroom podcast. So, and then I've got my book, Aggression in Play Therapy, a neurobiological approach for integrating extremes. Cause you know, I got to have a fun tagline on there. So I've got the book in there also. Yeah.
And are those both available on lisa-dion.com, lisa-dion.com?
Yeah. All of it's available on either site. .com is probably the go-to.
Okay. Wonderful. I'll include both links in the show notes. Just want to be sure people know what to find where. Lisa, thank you so much for sharing a tiny sliver of your knowledge and wisdom with us today on Therapy Chat.
Thank you, Laura. And just enjoyed being with you and very much enjoyed this conversation.
Thank you. Me too. Try Therapy Notes, the number one rated electronic health record system available today. With live telephone support 7 days a week, it's clear why Therapy Notes is rated 4.9 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot and has a 5-star rating on Google. Therapy Notes makes billing, scheduling, note-taking, and telehealth incredibly easy. And now for all you prescribers out there, Therapy Notes is proudly introducing ePrescribe. Try it today with no strings attached and see why everyone is switching to Therapy Notes, now featuring ePrescribe. You can get 2 months free by using promo code CHAT at therapynotes.com. Trauma Therapist Network is a website to learn about trauma and how it shows up in our lives and to find a trauma therapist. Go to traumatherapistnetwork.com to find a trauma therapist near you today.
Thank you for listening to Therapy Chat with your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC. For more information, please visit therapychatpodcast.com.